Hi again, people of marketing. Yes, you guessed it. This right here is a little ad. I'm not sure how much you know about Plannable, but we're a collaboration tool for social media teams, helping marketers around the world create, plan, review, approve, and schedule social media posts. The best part is that you can try Plannable for free, no strings attached. And if it strikes your fancy, we got a special offer just for you. Yes, I'm talking to you, dear listener who hasn't skipped past the ad. Go to plannable.io/listeners and use the discount code when upgrading to get 30% of the first 3 months. That is plannable.io/listeners. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the episode. Hey everyone, this is Xenia Muntan and welcome to another episode of People of Marketing Podcast. I'm the founder and CEO of Plannable, the collaboration tool for social teams, and I launched this podcast to take a sneak peek into the lives of top marketers. Every week we explore the story of their careers, the choices, mistakes, wins, and imperfections of their work life. Our guest today is Thomas Wakelin, social media marketing manager for Microsoft, responsible for the digital communication strategy across consumer, commercial, education, and developer audiences. Prior to this experience, Thomas has worked across multiple marketing agencies and publications, helping brands to better connect to customers across multiple industries, working in partnership with brands such as Adobe, Amazon, Canon, HP, and NFL. Thomas is particularly passionate about technology and helping brands to realize the power of building engaging community programs. Thomas, thank you so much for joining me today on People of Marketing Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to hopefully help everyone learn a little bit more about me and talk through some marketing. Yes. I'm very excited.
me too. So the best way to kickstart this conversation is by just working a bit through your career and trying to connect the dots, you know, looking backwards. So what would you say was your first interaction with marketing, or what got you into marketing in the first place?
So I think, like most people, my first interaction with marketing was growing up and through TV. Let's be honest, you've kind of sat in front of the TV. My parents probably wanted a break. So for me, those really classic ads and slogans such as, you know, I don't want to grow up, I want to be a Toys R Us kid, Action Man, the greatest hero of them all of the kind of classic advertisement through television, which was, let's be perfectly honest, targeted towards mainly kids for that pest of power, being able to go to mum or dad or whoever's looking after you and say, oh, I really, really want this toy, I really want this game, whatever. But I do specifically remember being very young and sitting down in the UK. We have a retailer called Argos, and they have this huge catalogue. It's a very, very big book. It's only been recently that they've decided to stop printing this huge book. But what you would do is you'd lie down in front of the fireplace or in front of the TV, and you would circle with a big red pen exactly how many toys you wanted for Christmas. And I think it's those kind of really cherished memories that got me into marketing. And I think it's being able to be really creative. When you think about campaigns such as Apple's Get a Mac campaign from, I think it was 2006 to 2009, I still remember being a teenager and seeing Nintendo's We Would Like to Play campaign from, I think it was 2006, and then the classics, which I'm sure everyone who's listening in the UK will remember, the Cadbury's Gorilla, the Dancing Eyebrows campaign. I think it's that fun and that excitement that really made me go, you know what, this marketing industry sounds pretty interesting and I'm going to give it a go.
Yeah. And you actually got the chance to work on some of those, you know, childhood memories, right? Nintendo and Pokemon as well.
Yes.
Early part of your career, right? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So, One of my first jobs in marketing actually was for a fantastic marketing agency in London. And Nintendo was one of the accounts that fortunately I was able to work on. And when I say started from the ground, working my way up, I remember spending hours creating press kits, putting different items into boxes, writing out letters. This is before, right? I think it must have been the very start of kind of an influencer. You can't see me right now. Obviously, this is a podcast, but I'm doing air quotes with my fingers. That kind of influencer mentality of, okay, well, these people have YouTube accounts. And what we could do is send them these boxes and fingers crossed that they do something with them. And, you know, it was really, like I said, fortunate to be able to have such a position, to be able to learn really how an agency works and how you would pitch ideas, how you would pitch creative, how everyone would gather around a whiteboard and say, oh, this is the brief. What do? We need to come up with an idea really quick. And it needs to make sense for the client, right?
Right.
But being able to work on brands like, you know, Nintendo, like you said, I've done multiple editorial roles in the past as well. So Pokemon, Moshi Monsters, Beyblade, very well-known children's toys brand, I suppose globally, but especially here in the UK. And I think it just really kind of made me realize just how creative you can be and how exciting marketing can be as an industry.
Right. So I remember the early start of my career and how much I relied on just learning from others, you know, building this mentorship network, because that's the only way you can, you know, really grow when you're, you know, at the early stage of your career. It's extremely important to have role models. Who was your role model in marketing when you were just starting out? And do you still look up to the same professionals now that you've reached a certain point in your career? Or how did your, you know, role models change across your
career? Yeah, I think like a lot of people, you add to it over the years. It's right. Never a list that's going to be complete. And I think that's so important. I think young people in marketing especially get really wrapped up in this idea of, oh, I need to find, you know, five mentors and they've got to be perfect. They've got to span the entire industry. The marketing's so huge. There's so many different parts of it. And that's why I'm so excited about it, whether it's, you know, digital, whether it's above the line, below the line, print, whether it's events. There's so much to get involved in. But one of my very early managers, she really made me realize that the only way that you can conduct fantastic marketing is to have a really comfortable, creative, and friendly atmosphere within a team, which I've always tried to carry around with teams that I work with. Hopefully, fingers crossed, they'd all agree that we try to be friendly and let everyone come up with ideas. You know, not every idea is going to be viable. There may be budget constraints, there may be implications with branding, for example, or it might just, you know, might not be the right time to actually get an idea live in market. But a lot of the times, in my experience, the very best ideas often come from ideas that you park up, that you say, you know what, not today, but let's just keep a note. Let's leave a post-it note on the whiteboard. But I've been able to learn from so many marketers across so many different companies. So whether that is colleagues, companies like Adobe, I've been really fortunate to have so many fantastic managers from companies such as McDonald's, the FA. I've got to work with teams from retailers such as Argos, AO, John Lewis and Partners. And then obviously, as any marketer would tell you, when you get to do partnerships or you attend events, or you might be at a trade show, then suddenly you realize who's next door. Companies like, you know, NFL, Canon, HP, many, many more. And every company has a different way of carrying out marketing as a process. And that's one of my favorite things about my role is actually not talking. It's learning about what works for other industries and what works for other companies. And it kind of keeps you on your toes and makes you think of different ways in order to do not only your day job, but when you're coming up with those really big ideas that you're sitting there saying, I need to make this work, but where can I kind of pull inspiration from? Who can I learn from? What could work well? What could maybe need to be tweaked a little bit?
That's such a great answer, and actually takes me to my next question.
Oh, okay.
You know, outside of Microsoft, what company do you think is doing great marketing today?
I'll give you two examples. I can't pick between the two. I really think Gymshark are doing a fantastic job. Their ads are eye-catching, their content is engaging, but they really get social media. They really understand how to use digital marketing to really kind of connect to customers and build that conversation. If you consider the monumental shift in our lives, you know, throughout the pandemic, the way that we live and the way that we work has changed so much. Gymshark has really had quite a challenge on their hands. You have to be able to go to a gym,
right,
really, to get the most out of their product. So the clue's in the name. Yet they've taken to social media to really build their communities and the relationships with their customers. They understand that social media and the communities that we build aren't just about selling clothes. It's about creating a conversation and sharing advice on how to get the most out of your workout, or being able to pick people up when they're down and being a really integral part of someone's social media feed in a way that doesn't come across as someone running into a room, ringing a big bell saying, buy this, buy this, buy this. It's about being just part of the conversation, right? And almost being a support network, I think, especially where we find ourselves right now. In a similar way, in the UK, we have a clothing retailer called Next. And I think they've done a really, really fantastic job with not only their print marketing, their website, their kind of the way that they conduct e-commerce, really, really kind of innovative, engaging ways that they kind of reach out to their customers. But what I wanted to share with you and the listeners today is they actually have a really incredible and unique Instagram strategy for their trainee and graduate program. So if you search Next, N-E-X-T, and then walk this way into Instagram, you'll see it. And basically, this is their Instagram account where they encourage people to sign up for apprenticeships, graduate intakes, or college grads, I suppose, if you're overseas. And what they've done is they've created a feed which is truly incredible. It shows real innovation to look at a platform like Instagram, and instead of posting, you know, three of the same image or a different image every single day, their feed for the past, I can't remember when the last time I actually, when I first saw this account, it must have been a few years ago, but it continues. It's one entire stretch of content. So everything follows on. It's almost like a huge kind of panel of different clothes, laptops, technology, everything that you would use in your career at Next. They've almost built this huge feed of hundreds of images on Instagram. And I think it just shows how creative you can be, even if you are quite restrained, right? You've got 1080 by 1080 square. That's it. That's what you're going to do. And that's why I think Next, as well as Gymshark, you know, fantastic examples of thinking outside the box when it comes to marketing.
Wow, those are really good choices, really good examples, Thomas. So I want to switch gears a bit, and I want to go back to the start of your career and actually go back to your studies. You studied business, right?
Yes. A little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything, exactly. That's actually a pretty good fit with social media, right? Because social media is a bit of, you know, a little bit of everything.
Yes.
So, you know, what I want to ask you is, from everything in marketing, why do you think you chose this specific work?
So a lot of what I talk about, whether it's internally in my role at the moment or externally at events or podcasts like this, I'm all about community. So the thing that I honestly, hand on heart, love the most about my job is building up that community of fans, not only across digital platforms. Before coronavirus, COVID-19, we were able to do a lot of in-person events. That's by far my favorite, but you know, you've got to play with the hand that you're dealt. But really making kind of I don't like the word customers. I would say our fans and people who really enjoy using our products, making them feel like they are part of a VIP club. You know, it's fantastic to always talk to our fans, whether that's a product launch event or whether we're talking to them on, I don't know, Instagram or even LinkedIn. And my career to date has really allowed me to build these relationships. You know, it's not about just having relationships with influencers. We have so many kind of conversations that we have with people who, you know, only have a following of, I don't know, less than 100 followers. But they're so passionate and they're so excited to hear from us. I've worked through community management roles, editorial planning, budget management, video editing, live stream, broadcasts, influencer management, whatever, you name it. But it's always connected, all of these roles, even, you know, video editing and photo editing. You want to showcase fans in a way that's really going to excite them. I think because we work in the industry, a lot of us forget that incredible feeling when, you know, your tweet is amplified, for example, by a brand, or someone quote retweets you, or you actually hear back from, you know, Microsoft, for example. Yeah. And it's, I think, being aware of that and being able to go, you know what, we think the work that you've created on, I don't know, Microsoft Surface, for example, you have so many amazing illustrators, Zina, like, seriously, their work puts me to shame. I'm here in Microsoft Paint trying to draw stick men, and they're just creating these incredible pieces of art. And we'll, you know, send them a note and say, we'd absolutely love to showcase this. And the response we get is so warm. It's so inviting. They're so excited. They go, oh, wow, my work is going to be shared by Microsoft. And it's, yes, because the spotlight should be put on you. You're using, you know, the products that we create and the software that we release to market to do incredibly exciting things. And I honestly, I think being able to work in the field that I do, that is what really kind of, I wake up in the morning and go, right, you know, what are we going to discover today? Every single day is different because we don't know who's going to reach out to us, or we don't know who we're going to come across. And being able to feed that into our social media strategy is amazing, because people are so happy when we feature them on across digital or in one of our campaigns, for example. And it's so nice to see, and for them to be part of our campaign. I love it so much.
I love your answer so, so much. I can't agree more with you. The value of every product is, you know, throughout the eyes of its users. So you can only, you know, they are the ones that actually give it value. You know, without your fans, as you say it, without them, you know, there is no value whatsoever in any product. So I loved your answer so much. I want to focus a bit on the today. So we talked quite a lot about your past, and I want to ask you about, what does your day-to-day look like? What does it mean to be the social media marketing manager at Microsoft? Tell us, you know, how you start your morning. You know, what's the first thing you check on your phone? How do you maintain a productive week? And what does it actually mean? You know, what's the type of work that you do?
I'm probably going to upset an awful lot of people, so I'm sorry if you're listening to this, because some of you will get triggered. I'm a huge Inbox Zero advocate.
Yes, me too. Hello.
I have to. I can't. For me, my inbox is, maybe this is an old-fashioned way to look at it. To me, my inbox, if there is a message there, that is part of my to-do list. Exactly, yes. Exactly. So the very first thing I do in the morning is I'll tackle my inbox. So I'll either be responding to messages from people across the business, from marketing managers who I partner with in order to kind of support their campaigns, or one of, you know, the many incredible agency partners that we work with. More often than not, when I briefly check my emails before jumping on this call, I think there's a few bits of creative that I need to approve. So we have to make sure that it aligns to brand guidelines. There'll be recommendations back and forth between various agency partners and myself and the team that I'm part of, to ensure that the content is appropriate for social, but also that it has the best chance of success. If we have paid campaigns in market, I'll usually partner with one of our other agency partners, I think you can start to see that we have an awful lot of relationship management that we have to do as part of my job. And we need to obviously ensure that any paid campaign is performing well, that we're on target to deliver against any objectives. But although in my role kind of today, I suppose, I won't be responding to community management, I won't be responding to people directly, I do like to have a little sneak peek every now and again. Every few hours or so, I'll jump into our community dashboards to see what the conversation is. Because whether it's, you know, consumer, commercial, education, developer, it's always really interesting to see the different types of conversations that we have. The way that we discuss comment with someone on our consumer channels, for example, is very, very different to the conversations that we've had with our commercial customers or our education customers. And it's often, if I'm being perfectly honest, a really great place to spark some creative thinking too. Some of our best ideas have come directly from our community. On our education community, for example, we now invite quite a few of them to be part of our basically a video series where we get teachers to answer burning questions from other teachers, especially because right now some teachers are in classrooms like as normal, some of them are still teaching from home. So we're trying to create a community and a place where teachers can feel really comfortable and confident to share their ideas and swap best practices. And that's incredible to see and be a part of, especially during like a pandemic like we are now. And it's absolutely, you know, some of the tips come out and you're going, okay, I might use this in my job, let alone being a teacher. I'm going to start using this when I wake up in the morning. So it's no day is exactly the same, but I would say that is what a typical morning would look like before I jump into a bunch of meetings.
So you touched upon an important subject, the one of, you know, being focused, because that's, and being organized. That's what, Inbox Zero is about. The entire philosophy is about making sure that you're extremely organized with your emails. So I have a great question to actually ask you on this, you know, productivity and organization topic, because you seem passionate about that. So I want to ask you, you know, what is one thing that currently stands between you and your most productive self? Because, you know, we marketers we have to juggle with so many things, right? Like just, you know, a bunch of distractions. But what stands between you and your most productive self?
I think, and for me, it's always an ongoing battle, I think, as marketers. We want to be involved in everything. We're like, it's so annoying that I've got all these meetings. But at the same time, I really want to be part of that meeting. Like, add me on. I'll drop in if I can. And then you've always got something. Sometimes you've got kind of like two or three meetings on the go and you're going, oh, I need to pick. How am I going to pick between all these different meetings? My advice, and it's took me so long to get used to this, and it's... someone who I see as a mentor right now has really advised me and really helped me to improve on this. I'm not an expert by any means, but it's actually really being able to let go and to kind of to explain that is you don't need to be part of every single marketing meeting. And I think it's really hard.
Letting go of fear of missing out, right?
Exactly. You can be part of the, you know, the kickoff meeting, I suppose. So you go, okay, I understand from my role exactly what is required from my part of the business. So, you know, whether that is social, whether that is editorial, whether that is, you know, web banners, video shoots, photo shoots, whatever, I understand what's needed. But I have a fantastic team, a really, really fantastic team who need to be empowered to go above, kind of go along their normal day and just truly own it. So I can oversee it. I can oversee the campaign and say, okay, fantastic. That looks like we're on track. Do you need me to step in? Do you need any additional resources? Do you need me to try and figure out really what is being requested from, you know, the campaign owner, for example, or, you know, a certain business group director who is asked for this request? But there's no need to be involved in every single email or every meeting. What I find really, really beneficial to me is that I will put in, especially with everyone working from home now, just 10-minute catch-ups. Literally 10-minute catch-ups. They don't have to be every single day. With one of our agency partners, I have a half an hour catch up on a Monday and a Wednesday, and we find that works fantastic. And it is a bit of a, okay, what are you working on? Okay, fantastic, tick, 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 tick. However, what is really beneficial in those meetings are the little kind of pinging off each other, I suppose, and going, oh, well, fantastic that you said you're working on that, because Bob over here is actually gonna be talking about ABC and maybe you could work together, or do we already have a piece of creative, for example, so we don't have to create something from scratch. And I think that would be my best piece of advice, Senior, really, would be learn to let go. It's not going to fall apart. You don't have to be involved in everything. You are not the glue, but really kind of empower your colleagues. If you manage a team, empower your team and really just put your trust in them, because the moment you do and you start to see it succeed, it becomes easier. It really does, but you're never going to know unless you try, and you've got to let go at some point. So that would be my advice.
That's such a good one. Especially, I like the 10-minute meetings. And I think I heard a podcast, I think on Freakonomics, and they were talking about a study that said that, meetings that take longer than 25 minutes are actually not that productive. So that, you know, you have to aim at keeping, you know, meetings below 25 minutes. Otherwise, it just gets messy. It just doesn't, it's not organized anymore. So I love your 10-minute meetings practice.
Yeah, I'm notorious for, even in those 10-minute meetings, listing bullet points and saying, right, this is what we're going to talk about. Bang, 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 bang. And I always get to like the end of the list and I'm like, okay, there's about like 8 or 9 things that we need to somehow discuss. So it's like less than a minute for each one. I'm like, I'm not sure if this is going to work, but I need to do the common courtesy. Maybe it's because we're British and trying to be polite, but then I'll always add at the bottom, oh, any other business. If anyone else has anything else you want to talk about, then yeah, we'll make times. A lot of the time, those 10 minutes go over. I'm not going to lie.
So in this podcast, I really love talking not just, you know, about the good stuff in the life of marketers, but also, you know, about the struggles and the challenges that we all go. Because it's, you know, it's a roller coaster type of thing. So I want to ask you, what habit or skill did you struggle the most to develop in yourself across the years? And what's, you know, a current one you're still trying hard to improve?
Yeah, I remember one of my very, very first roles in marketing. And it was kind of like an all-you-can-eat buffet. I was the kind of person that I'm sure we all know one. And let's be honest, it's frustrating when you've got someone who was like me going, oh, I'll do that, I'll do this, I'll do this, I'll do that, oh, that campaign sounds exciting, I'll do this. And you eventually kind of burn yourself out, I suppose, doing all of this, you know, extracurricular activity. You'll be spending your evenings, spending your weekends doing jobs. And I have this conversation with early in career so much. I try and support them as much as I can, because I remember kind of being their age and being so scared to ask anyone to be a mentor, or so scared to ask anyone for advice, because, you know, you're a grown-up now and you should know how the world of work works, even though you've never worked in an office or you've never kind of stepped foot in a corporate environment. But just kind of slowing down, the advice that I always give, especially kind of new starters at Microsoft, is you need to boss your day job first. And by boss your day job, I mean you need to own it. You need to be the expert in your day job. So, you know, it's really important that you're known for being trustworthy, that you're dedicated. I suppose most importantly, you're dependable. If I need to know something about a very, especially in a a company the size of the one that I work in, if I like find out that you work on one particular kind of part of the business, then it really helps if you're an expert, or it really helps if you're able to kind of connect me to someone else. Obviously, volunteer, explore other opportunities that are of interest, but you must nail that day job, because really that's what you're known for. This, the same way that people across the business who like, it's so funny, I'll get random messages being like, hey Tom, how's it going? I don't know who this person is. I've never seen this person a day in my life. But 9 times out of 10 it's, oh, hey Tom, just hoping that I could, you know, pick your brains, that you could talk to me about social, or, you know, my customer is working on a digital marketing strategy and they have a few questions and we don't know who we could talk to, but can we ask you some questions? And of course, like, you try and make time. Yeah. So I think it was that skill of focus very early in my career. I would still do the work, but it had such a big detriment, I suppose, to what I would do after work, what I would do at weekends. I was a workaholic, and you know, it makes an impact on the friendships that you have, with your relationships with your loved ones, and you just need to be able to manage it. And I think, especially with how the job market is at the moment, people get quite worried about, okay, well, I need to be seen to always be online. I need to be seen to be working so hard. And you can do that, but you do not need to do, you know, 9 till 9 every single day of the week in order to do it. As long as you can absolutely nail your job, that you can do a fantastic piece of work whenever someone, you know, comes up to you and asks for help, I think that goes such a long way, as opposed to just having, you know, a little green active bubble next to your name. I think that's my opinion anyway. We'll see what everyone else thinks.
I think it's a lot about being present, but like for real, being there, you know, being focused and present and showing up.
Especially
presence, but you know, really being present.
Yeah, and especially, right, we're all working from home at the minute, or an awful lot of people are. And you know, some people will have children, they'll have family in the house, they'll have their partner in the house, and it can be difficult. But I'm not expecting my team to be online 9 through 6 constantly. If I reach out to them and, you know, I don't get a response in 5-10 minutes, that's fine. That's fine. They've got other things going on in their life. They're like, it's the entire company isn't going to burn down if someone doesn't respond to me saying, oh, could we amplify this on Twitter? Yeah. Like, it's cool. But at the same time, we do have work to be done. So let's have, you know, honest and open conversations as a team to make sure that, you know, I understand that, okay, you need to drop the kids off. That's cool. I'll try, you know, I might, if I text you, for example, then it means it's pretty urgent, but I'm not expecting you to drop everything. Just get back to me as soon as you can. But if I send you a message on, you know, Microsoft Teams, or I send you an email, maybe it's less urgent. Maybe it's something that you can pick up, as long as it gets done by the end of the day. You manage your time, and let me know if there's anything I can do to help.
So how are those signs, are they well known in the company that, you know, a text means, you know, that type of priority, or a message on Microsoft Teams is, you know, is a different priority, or is it just, you know, self-explanatory in a way? How do people know the priority of the urgency, you know, of messages?
Yeah, I think so the example I gave was just from my teams, because obviously, unlike some other of my colleagues, for example, my stakeholders and the teams that I look after and try and support are mostly external, actually. So that this is kind of different ways of working that we've developed and kind of agreed and nodded and smiled about over the course of so many years. A lot of what, you know, a standard, I suppose, that feels a bit rude to say, but a typical Microsoft employee we're all very active on Microsoft Teams. Yeah. I think it's fantastic to be able to, you know, have it on your laptop, to be able to jump onto calls on your phone. But the understanding that people have lives outside of work is right. very, very much ingrained within our culture. And yes, you know, the work that we do is very important. The same as, you know, no one job has value over another. But we need to understand, and you know, it's fantastic to see throughout our business that people do really understand that, you know, if I reach out to someone and they don't respond instantly, they might be doing other things. Or if there's a young child crying in the background or randomly comes into the middle of a conference call, that, you know, you don't touch, you don't roll your eyes, you don't yeah. kind of shake your head. It's the new way of working that we're finding ourselves in. So I've actually had some brilliant moments of young members of families jumping onto team calls and asking them, you know, what design do you like? And showing them different kind of creative concepts. But I think so we just lovely. Need to be, oh yeah, it's so sweet. It's so sweet. But just, I think it makes everyone's lives better, right? If we just be polite, be kind to each other, and support each other, because it's the only way that we're not all going to go stir crazy when we're locked into our homes for so much time.
Yeah, no, I can't agree more with you. It's such a good point. Mm. I have sometimes in the evening this moment, you know, at 10 p.m. where I have like this idea, this wild idea that I just need to share with one of my colleagues.
Oh, I'm the same.
And I was just sending, you know, in the past, I was just sending them a message with the idea or the question or whatever, you know, what I had. And then in time, I realized that I might be putting pressure on those people. And
yes,
something that I changed
yes.
was I changed just the phrasing. I instead mm. of just dumping that idea, I said something in the beginning, like, hey, this is a message for you in the morning. Just so yes. they know that it's not yes. urgent to reply to my question or to my idea.
Yeah.
And they can take care of it in the morning.
Yeah, my team often laugh because I'm similar to you. I find myself sometimes, I don't know what it is about trying to fall asleep, but
yeah.
that's where some of my best ideas come. If I'm going to be honest, right. I'll be lying there and go, oh, I know exactly what would make a great social campaign. And suddenly I'm there on my phone typing away, or I've got a little notepad and I'm like drawing random ideas. And I wake up in the morning and I go, oh, what was I thinking? This is not a good idea. But I often, instead of kind of sending texts, because I did do exactly what you did, which was, you know, oh, one for the morning. But I still found my team being a bit like, oh, I need to respond.
Not helping.
But, yeah, exactly. I was like, no, guys, like, chill. But I would write, and I still do it now, actually. I write out emails and then just save them in drafts. Uh-huh. What I need to learn what to do is to not send everything at once at like 9 o'clock and I go, send. It's really satisfying to do it, to send off like 15 emails. You feel like you've had a great morning in like the space of 60 seconds. But then what happens is you just get this influx of responses immediately afterwards. Right. So yeah, you can, if it's not kind of time critical or time urgent, then you can, you know, space them out throughout the day. Is what my advice would be.
That's a good tip. Yeah, it's a good one. So I have one last question before we go into the rapid fire session. And it's a bit of a controversial one.
Oh, okay.
But it always gets the best.
I'm scared. I'm really scared.
What is, you know, the marketing world is full of, you know, new trends and new buzzwords
yes.
every single day, especially the social media part of it,
mm-hmm.
right? So
mm-hmm.
I want to ask you, what's, you know, one belief or popular thing, something trending today in our industry that is annoying you or that you disagree
oh, okay.
with?
Oh no, this is
yes.
this could go terribly wrong. So
let's see.
So, yeah, I know, right? So I'm notorious for this. Like the thing that really frustrates me is some companies' complete focus when we talk about social media on impressions mm-hmm. uh-huh. as a number.
Yeah.
So it really triggers me whenever I see marketers on platforms like LinkedIn, or if I see them on blogs, websites, whatever, shout about, oh, you know, it's so fantastic. We've generated a bajillion impressions. And, right. you know, this means that my campaign was really successful. Now, don't get me wrong, before everyone starts going crazy, hopefully a lot of people, you know, listening to this on a walk and they're nodding, they're going, yes, Tom, yes. but, you know, impressions are a very useful metric when they're combined with other statistics. But in my opinion, yeah. they should never be a primary KPI because let me give you a real world example. Impressions are essentially, you know, the number of times that your digital content is served. And that word served is super, super important. It's not consumed, it's right. served. So I could put on a sandwich board and run around London shouting, oh, ice cream is brilliant. Don't we all love ice cream? Ringing a bell, kind of just running up to people, shouting at them and running away. And my message of I love ice cream would be delivered to lots and lots and lots of people. But how many people would actually take any action off it? How many people would end up buying ice cream? How many people would discuss ice cream? They might discuss the crazy man who ran up to them with a bell and shouted in their face, I love ice cream, and then ran off. But I do think it's, you know, really important to, you know, remember, especially on social, some of the people I run up to might have headphones in. They might not hear me. They might not yeah. speak English. They might be, if we actually use a proper social example, they might just be scrolling through their timeline really, really quick because they're looking for something else. And that's why, you know, I think impressions, yes, it's important, especially if we're discussing share of voice or, you know, how well do we think this message has been repeated in market, but it shouldn't be one of your top KPIs, is my opinion. We'll see what people say.
Such a good one, you know, talking about vanity metrics in a way. Mm. But also such a good analogy of explaining.
Yeah, no one, please, nobody put on sandwich boards and run around with, we're going to create testing a huge it. Demand. Yeah, exactly. A huge demand for ice cream around the world and sell out bells everywhere.
Awesome. Well, Thomas, let's go into the rapid fire session. I have four quick questions for you. So quick questions, okay. quick answers. Are you ready?
Yes. Okay, I'm ready. It's like a TV quiz show. I love it.
What's your favorite social media network or, you know, your most addictive one?
Instagram or TikTok, but it'll be Instagram.
Good. What's your favorite app or tool you use at work? I already have my guess, but...
well, it's not Teams, but that is great. And I'm biased, obviously, but Microsoft yeah. OneNote is a really great way to keep everything organized across, you know, laptop, phone, everything. So it's like my digital notebook. It's fantastic.
Amazing. The one you're using, you know, midnight before falling asleep.
yeah, ideas. Yeah. It's like the one that's just filled with random scribbles that no one can even understand other than me.
Perfect. What's the worst advice you've ever received?
Oh, worst advice. Just play it safe.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It triggers me. Even now, I'm like, no, you should never have said that to me.
And my last question is, okay. if you wouldn't be doing what you're doing today, what else would you do?
Oh, yeah. I would hope that I'd either be presenting, you know, either television or radio.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah,
not too far.
I think
not too
so.
Far from what is still, you know, broadcasting, communication.
Yeah, let's go. Let's stick with broadcasting. Let's not overinflate my ego.
So still in the same area. That's good to know.
Yeah, that means that I've picked the right career, right?
yes. Thomas, thank you so much for, you know, taking the time to share your journey and to share your, you know, your story with our audience. I really appreciate that. I really enjoyed talking to you.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's I've really enjoyed this. We were saying before even recording started. So I'm going to press record. Are you ready? And I was like, oh, okay. Let's see where we go with this. But no, it's been lovely to talk to you.
Such an amazing conversation. And for everyone else listening in, thank you so much for joining. And don't forget, we have new episodes every Wednesday. Subscribe to People of Marketing on your favorite podcast app. And till next time, keep rocking, you all.